NPR's award-winning legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg joins us now to talk about two big decisions that the U.S. Supreme Court will be deciding in the days to come. One involves a key feature of the Affordable Care Act that could decide the law's future. The other is gay marriage itself. Nina, welcome back to Up to Date. Nice to have you.
It's really nice to be here.
Well, taken together, these strike me as pretty weighty decisions. Can you put them in some context for us? I mean, just how significant will these rulings be?
Well, one, the Affordable Care Act is weighty mainly in its consequences, not in its legal implications, particularly because it's a statutory interpretation case. It's not a constitutional challenge to what the government can do and can't do. The other, same-sex marriage, is potentially huge. It's probably huge either way, but if the court were to uphold the right of same-sex couples to get married and say that that's a fundamental right to marry for them, it would change the face of marriage in the United States.
You know, after covering these cases, do you have a sense of where the court is going to go on these, or is that just a fool's errand based on your experience over all these years covering the justices?
For a reporter, it's a fool's errand because I never predict, and I can't tell you how many times I have been made to look incredibly intelligent by not predicting, because the people who go out there and say, oh, this was a train wreck, the court's clearly going to rule X, and then, you know, 2 months later, 3 months later, they're exactly wrong. They really look stupid, and I don't want to look stupid, so I don't say. And in these two cases, I thought it was particularly difficult in the Affordable Care Act case. You know, the Chief Justice, who's an essential, potentially a pivotal vote in this case, barely said anything, so you have nothing to go on. Justice Kennedy, clearly, based on his previous dissent in the constitutional challenge, he really dislikes this law intensely, and that's an understatement. But he was having trouble with the interpretation, the statutory interpretation that those challenging the law were offering, and so that wasn't at all clear either. And then in the same-sex marriage case, you know, the weight of the evidence is that the court is heading in the direction of legalizing same-sex marriage, but you couldn't tell that from the argument at all. And Justice Kennedy, who's been the pivotal person on this issue for a very long time, on the issue of gay rights in general, sent very mixed signals.
You know, when will these decisions, these rulings, when do they come down?
So at this time of year, this is what I call the heavy breathing time of year. You know, when are they coming down? When are they coming down?
Yeah.
In fact, one of my colleagues said to me the other day, how many times were you asked that in your office yesterday? And the answer is we don't know. I think the only thing I can tell you is sometime the week of June 29th. June 29th is the last scheduled opinion day, but that doesn't mean they can't extend it, and often do. It's a Monday, and it's not at all inconceivable, according to several members of the court that I've talked to, that the session would bleed into July 1st or perhaps July 2nd even.
Well, why the secrecy? Why don't they come out and say, we're ready to announce this very important ruling on this date, we'll announce this one on this date? What's the big deal?
Well, they don't know is the answer. They're still working. They have a tentative vote the week that the case is argued. So in the Obamacare case, that was March, early March, and in the same-sex marriage case, that was at the very end of April. And that week, they have a tentative vote. But first of all, votes, people do change their minds. Not often, but they do. And then there's the business of writing an opinion and a dissent, replying in the opinion to the dissent. There are often as many as 20 drafts of an opinion that are circulated. It takes a long time to hash out the language of an opinion. There's no trading votes the way they trade votes in the House and the Senate. That doesn't happen. This is an ideological and intellectual argument, exercise, whatever you want to call it. And what they're doing is saying what the law of the land will be and sort of setting the table for future cases, possibly. And they don't want to get it wrong. And they work pretty hard at it. And very often at this time of year, you'll see a member of the court at some event for a very brief time, and then he or she will say, well, I have to go back to home and write some more.
Hmm.
And they're still writing. Mm-hmm. They're still writing. And then they have to get it, whatever the final thing is, it has to be printed. As I said, there are sometimes 20, 30 drafts of these decisions before they're finalized. And these cases were not argued that long ago. So they, as Chief Justice Roberts often says, we release them as soon as they're ready.
Hmm.
They just don't know when they're going to be ready. And they're like everybody else. They will make the deadline. They will make it by the beginning of July. They'd like to make it by June 29th. They may not be able to, but they will make it by the beginning of July. And it will happen.
Hmm.
We just don't know exactly when.
Right. I'm visiting with NPR's legal affairs correspondent, Nina Totenberg. You know, Nina, this might be a good time to review, you know, how the court makes these decisions. I mean, what do we know about these very private meetings where the justices gather and votes are taken and how they make go about the process of making these big decisions?
Well, most of what goes on is not in face-to-face meetings. So that meeting, it's called the conference, at the end of each argument week, they discuss briefly each case and they take this tentative vote. And if the Chief Justice is in the majority, he assigns the majority opinion. If he's not, the senior justice in the majority will assign the opinion. And the dissent works similarly, the senior justice more or less assigning, but there's some back and forth on agreement among the dissenters. But as I said, it's tentative. Even the author of opinions have been known to change their minds, and there's even an expression for it. It won't write. You sit down to write it, and it doesn't make sense suddenly. You're trying to make it make sense, and it doesn't work. And so there's a very famous case involving whether non-denominational prayer at a public school graduation
mm-hmm.
was constitutional, and Justice Kennedy was the deciding vote. The way I know this is from the Blackmun papers, which are now available mm-hmm. in the Library of Congress. Justice Kennedy was assigned the majority opinion saying it was constitutional to have such prayers, and after a while he said, it won't write. I was wrong, and I'm changing my vote. And then he wrote the opinion for a different 5-4 majority the other way.
Huh.
And there were at least 10 more drafts, though, after he did that, arguing about phrases and words and sentences to make sure that people, for example, wouldn't be forced to stand. There were all kinds of crazy mm-hmm. things in it, but they were trying to make sure they were making a rule that would work.
So they take this tentative vote after oral briefings before the court, and then the opinions get assigned and justices start writing, and then what happens?
Well, there may be multiple drafts before it's inside the chambers before the individual justice circulates it to the other justices.
Okay.
Then after they circulate it to the other justices and there's a dissent, well, first of all, the deadline for all first draft dissents was this past Monday. So there's a lot of back and forth between the majority author and the dissenting author. And there may be people who finally say, look, I can agree with all but part four of this opinion, and I have to write something separate. There are lots of drafts back and forth in the final process as well. But almost everything is done in writing. That weekly conference is the only routine face-to-face meeting that they have to discuss things. There may be times when a justice goes to somebody's chambers to work out the language and something, just the way we might have an editor come sit down and talk mm-hmm. about a story with us. But there's not the lobbying that people imagine. There's not the lobbying is in writing.
So it's a fairly solitary existence. So the Supreme Court is not a team. It's really nine individuals, each doing his or her own thing.
it's a bit that way. Mm-hmm. And as one justice once said to me when I was a very young reporter and I was trying to figure out how this system worked, he said, you know, getting five people under one tent can require some pretty fancy stitching sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm wondering, for you as a reporter, Nina, who will be trying to describe these rulings and report on them as they come down, how do you prepare? I mean, have you written stories that can be popped up on the web as soon as the announcement comes down, say on gay marriage, and you've written it one way and you've written it the other way just to cover your bases and you'll pop up the version that seems to fit? Or is it not that simple given the complexities of the opinions themselves?
Every time I try to do that, it just doesn't work because there are too many variations on what they could say. Now, in the same-sex marriage case, there are simpler variations, but you don't know what grounds they're going to say this on. And that makes a difference. And so that's a bit of a fool's errand most of the time. And in the ACA case, you really don't know. You can write paragraphs, individual paragraphs about the effect or the past history or how this case started and sort of B matter, what they call in the newspaper business B matter. Mm-hmm. And you can have that ready to plug in, and I may do some of that next week as I get more and more hysterical. But in general, it really just doesn't work. And I remember I one time was going to be away, and the only question was whether they were going to agree to hear the Defense of Marriage Act case and the California Prop 8 case. And I thought I had written every variation and tracked it. And they did the one thing I hadn't tracked. I mean, I didn't think they were. I thought it was not possible that they were going to take the Prop 8 case. Nobody thought they were going to take the Prop 8 case from California. And so I didn't deal with that adequately. And so it ruined all of my planning. It just didn't work. So you can plan the people you want to talk to afterwards. And I do a fair amount of that.
So how much pressure do you feel on announcement days, on decision days when they come down to turn these very complex rulings into understandable stories? I'm just, as a longtime reporter myself, I'm just feeling your pain here a little bit. The pressure in an internet age must be just enormous.
It is enormous, but I have a lot of help. I really do. I have my two top editors, Beth Donovan, the head of the Washington desk, and Ron Elving, who's my editor.
Sure.
And they sit here at the Hub with the newscast people, looking at the opinion as it's released so that they make sure that everybody has looked at it and agrees on what it says before we say what it says. And I am in the courtroom because when they announce decisions from the bench, they give you a little synopsis of what the holding is. And that's as about a reliable a way of figuring out what they've said as anything. Then I come downstairs and I do live into the newscast, usually, if it's a big opinion, do live into Morning Edition. Those are the two places I'm most likely to screw up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I write an All Things Considered piece, and somebody else takes care of the first bite on the web because I can't interview. I'm interviewing people usually between 12 and 2 or 12:30 and 2, and then I'm cutting and writing. And even if I'm in the second hour of the show, which is 5 o'clock Eastern time, that doesn't leave you a lot of time to write, edit, beat a time, and be right. And to read the opinion. Oh, yes, and read the opinion.
Hey, how often do you and your team agree that we're not going to announce the ruling during this hourly newscast because we're still not sure? We're still not sure what it says and what it means.
I think most of the time they do know by the next newscast, but because I'm usually not there, I'm in the courtroom listening to the dissent by then or whatever. But I'm willing and they're willing to take an extra minute or two to make sure we're right. You remember famously that in the constitutional challenge to the Affordable Care Act, the Obamacare law.
Yes.
At least two of the major four networks got it wrong. I mean, dead wrong. Absolutely diametrically wrong. I don't want to ever be in that position, and neither does NPR. So I've always been willing to be, this is not one of those things that matters enormously that you get it 30 seconds before somebody else. At least it doesn't matter to me. I'd much rather have it be right.
Yeah. Hey, are you tense on those mornings when the rulings come down? Or after all these years, you just roll along like it's no big deal?
It's like anything else. You know, sometimes you try to be dead calm. But there comes a moment sometimes where you realize that something either historic is happening mm-hmm. or something totally unexpected is happening. And your heart is pounding and you're making a horribly difficult judgment. I remember, I think it was when the Guantanamo cases were up and the court said that people at Guantanamo had the right to challenge their detentions. And it was very complicated, and I wasn't sure I understood all the implications of the decision. And there were two dissents, long dissents, from Justices Scalia and Thomas, I think. And I did something I had never done before. By at 10:30, I said, I got to get out of here. And I left during the dissent, the announcement of the dissents. I just left because I knew I was going to, or maybe it was 20 of 11, I knew I had to be on the newscast in 20 minutes. And I needed to at least look at the written page.
Just a final thing. As someone who's worked in that building for so many years, do you develop sources who will tell you the night before, Nina, the ruling on the gay marriage thing will go this way or that way so it'll help you prepare?
Never. Never, ever. Anybody that did that and was caught doing it would lose their jobs and probably their reputations. And justices, for God's sakes, don't do it. I mean, I have one or two members of the court who I've known for 20, 30 years. I consider them actually friends, even though that's Justice Ginsburg and Justice Scalia. I would never ask and they would never tell me. That would be really dumb.
Even asking would be seen as being out of line.
I think so. I've had occasions when I sort of tried to sort of figure out what was going on. Nah, you just get a stone face. It's not worth the candle. And, you know, there is this little thing, which is that, yes, they finished this case. It's ready to be announced. But any justice can call back his or her vote up until the last minute. So nothing is in stone until it's announced. So you would be, it's really, it's not worth trying to find out. Everybody's in the same predicament. Some of us do it better. Some of us do it worse. Some of us triumph on some days and don't triumph on others. And you just have to hope and pray that you do a good job.
That's NPR's legal affairs correspondent, Nina Totenberg. Nina, thank you. And know how much so many of us out here in the heartland appreciate what you do, how much I appreciate what you do. Thanks so much for your time.
Oh, that's so nice of you. And it was really a pleasure being with you.
That's NPR's Nina Totenberg.